Death Watch, Mission Purge, by Gav Thorpe. Read by Clive Wood and Tim Treloar. The four giant warriors filled the landing bay with their bulk. Each was clad in black armor, three with only the silver of one shoulder pad and their chapter colors on the other breaking the sable. The fourth, raven liveried from head to foot. Behind them, their gunship took up the rest of the chamber, its engines idling. The man that greeted them was slender, his slightness of build made more prominent by a greatcoat. It was of heavy blue cloth, much decorated with braiding and golden buckles. An affectation pretending military command, perhaps, or maybe duly earned in the service of an Imperial Guard regiment. The man's thin face was scarred around the right eye and ear, lending credence to the latter theory. Artemis took in the details without effort, noting a twitch of the right hand. Was it tendon damage or a nervous reflex? The man entered the flight bay alone, but left armed men in the corridor outside. Like the man's demeanor, it was a conflicting image. Armsmen close by signaled potential resistance, but the man that greeted the warriors of the Death Watch did not bring his soldiers into the flight bay.
I am Fanar Kempt Isseri, captain of the Volans Batavus. For what reason do I have the honor of this visit?
Brother, Captain Artemis, I come with instruction that you are not to dock with the orbital station of Plexius. You are to come to a halt and submit to the inspection of my squad.
Four space marines is a trifle overkill for a customs boarding, is it not? By what right do you seek to delay a rogue trader on his rightful business? I mean no disrespect, but I have perishable cargo.
Your cooperation will minimize any delays, Master Isseri.
I know your name, brother captain, but I do not recognize your colors. See here, this one is the pauldron of the Space Wolves, and I recognize the emblem of the white consuls on your other companion. Yet you and this one adorn yourself in black, a curious assemblage. I find that suspicious. What interest is it to the Adeptus Astartes what I have in my hold?
We are brothers of the Death Watch, Master Isseri, drawn from many chapters. I was raised a warrior of the Mortifactors. We carry the full authority of the Inquisition.
The brother captain reached into a pouch at his waist and produced a small wooden box. He opened it carefully with gauntleted hands to show the golden insignia of the Inquisition. Artemis watched Isseri carefully, noting the slight narrowing of eyes and furrowing of the brow. There was a contradictory hint of a smile at the corner of the man's mouth.
It's no surprise that you have not heard of our organization. We are not concerned with the day-to-day affairs of Imperial servants.
So what brings you to my ship, Captain? I can assure you that there is nothing but the mundane and day-to-day about my business at Plexius. I have a hold full of fruit from Kabir for the palaces of the Imperial Commander. They are only in temporal retardation, not full stasis. I am sure you would not wish for the Imperial Commander's shipment to spoil.
Isseri was not being forthright, and his argument demonstrated unwillingness beyond dissatisfaction at simple inconvenience. However, Artemis did not race to a hasty conclusion.
Your invocation of the Imperial Commander is pointless. Even he submits to the will of the Inquisition. There is no threat or appeal to higher authority that will prevent us performing an inspection.
The brother captain's companion, Lavestus of the White Consuls, had less patience and stepped forward. He raised his heavy bolter just a fraction.
You misunderstand the brother captain. He is not making a request. He is not seeking your permission. By the authority of the Inquisition, we have boarded this vessel. A loyal servant of the Emperor would not seek to hinder us in our duty.
Isseri flinched and stepped back from the imposing warrior, glancing at Artemis for a moment, perhaps seeking a rebuttal to Lavestus's pronouncement.
My brother is correct, Master Isseri. You will give orders to bring your ship to a halt and comply with my demands.
Yeah, of course, Captain. I meant no harm. If you follow me, I will speed your inspection in any way I can.
Your cooperation is noted. When we have cleared the flight bay, open the outer gate so that our transport may depart.
Is that wise? Sorry, I do not mean to disagree. I am taken aback that you will remain for so long. The Volans Batavis is not a large vessel, barely 500 metres. Your inspection will not take too much time, I hope. But yes, we can let your gunship depart, of course.
Sekor, take up a position 50 kilometres from the ship. Inform me if she has not fired retros within 5 minutes.
Confirmed, Brother Captain.
In the corridor, a dozen armsmen waited with shotguns ready. They wore grey protective suits, baggy at the arms and legs, and their faces were covered with visored helms. Artemis saw swarthy skin on all of the men and wondered from which world they hailed. There was no insignia on their uniforms, and they did not move away as the Space Marines exited the launch bay. Harrick Thunderfang stopped beside one of them and hefted his atomizer cannon to his chest. The weapon, an upgraded multi-melter deemed too dangerous by his parent chapter, dwarfed the weapon of the crewman. The man did not react except to tilt his head to look up into the face of the tall warrior's helm.
I don't know what your master told you was coming, but that little gun of yours would not be much use against me, would it?
An honor guard, Lord, nothing more. For me, no threat was intended.
None taken.
Take us to the main hold, Master Isseri. We will be as swift as duty allows.
The roving gaze of Artemis took in everything. Isseri kept a well-maintained ship. The bulkheads were freshly painted in pale blue, exposed fittings and metal doors polished to a gleam. The ship was little more than a cargo hold with engines. Crew quarters, a bridge and four small gun turrets were all that broke the smooth lines of the craft's hull. They passed down a stairwell into the main hold, a cavernous space that was poorly lit by the flickering lumen strips that sprang into life overhead. The light cast shadows from gantries and cranes crisscrossing the ceiling. Artemis's armor detected a drop in temperature of several degrees as they descended. Isseri stopped at the bottom of the stairway and waved a hand at the lines of identical transport containers, each 10 meters long and half as high.
The fruits of my labors, as it were.
How many containers?
206, Captain. Most in this hold, another 50 in the secondary hold below. The temporal seals are all intact. I'll check them myself when we departed. Please, Captain, I do not understand the need for this inspection.
You visited Alantaris 4, did you not?
Why, yes. But that was nearly 2 years ago. A dull, dull planet.
A lot duller now. The Inquisition executed exterminatus on Alantaris 4. Irrevocable Genos contamination. Virus bomb turned it into a lifeless rock.
The ship's captain paled at this news and swallowed hard. It was not an unexpected reaction to mention of Exterminatus, the Inquisition's final resort. There was more than passing fear, though, a touch of genuine concern.
You think that something came aboard there? Surely we would have seen some evidence in the last 2 years.
Well, that is the purpose of this inspection.
Very well. Waste your time if you must. If you need me, contact one of the crew.
Artemis watched the shipmaster head back up the stairs with some undue haste, it seemed. When Isseri had disappeared from sight, the brother captain turned his attention to the contents of the hold. The Space Marines were not alone. On bridging gantries crossing the chamber, figures in bulky void suits labored at the hoisting machinery in preparation for the expected docking with the principal orbital station. The men moved awkwardly, shuffling along the narrow walkways, dragging cables and chains. In the dim light, even Artemis's enhanced vision could not make out their faces in the shadows of the suit hoods.
You know the threat we seek here? Gene stealers. If one of them came aboard at Alantaris, any number of the crew may be infected by now. Stay vigilant.
I am always vigilant, Brother Captain. No mark of heretic, mutant, or alien is beyond my gaze. The Emperor has bestowed upon us gifts to see such foul spawn, and if they are here, we will root them out.
You didn't see those Cathelan cudbears in the cave at Forterin, did you?
A momentary oversight.
If you would spend as much effort watching our flank as you do sermonizing on the gifts of the Emperor, we would not have lost Vadegard.
for which I have made copious apology and penance to the Emperor. The loss of Brother Vanagard vexes me still.
The fourth member of the kill squad stepped between the Space Wolf and the White Consul and held up a placating hand to each of them in turn. Unlike the others, he bore no chapter heraldry. He was one of the Black Shield, sworn permanently to the service of the Death Watch, all ties to his former duties and loyalties broken. Artemis had first met Urbino during an orc cleansing on Salphatos Decimus nearly 3 years earlier, but still knew nothing about the warrior. Nothing confirmed, at least. Artemis had drawn several conclusions about his companion's history from observation, but was respectful enough of Urbino's desires for anonymity not to speculate openly. Haddock, Levestus, and Sekor frequently displayed no such discretion. Urbino did not seem to mind, neither confirming nor denying any of their claims, both sensible and outlandish.
Brothers, if we are to spend our time repeating the deficiencies of past behavior, we would be here for hours. I take equal blame for the demise of poor Vadegard, for if I have not been so intent upon that enemy warlord, I would have been able to assist our deceased brother against the Cadbear ambush.
Urbino is correct. Now is not the time for airing these grievances again, if there is ever such a time. Tell me, Levestus, what do your Emperor-gifted senses tell you about our current situation?
Levestus took a few paces towards the closest container and examined a small room pattern screen set into the corrugated metal.
The chronometer on this control is said to collapse the semi-stasis field in little less than 4 hours. It has been active for 312 days.
Those are the facts, but what do they mean, brother?
The Imperial Commander likes his fruit really fresh.
Such a wit, Brother Thunderfang. How the days on Fenris must drag for your brothers devoid of your company. I fear my absence passes without similar regret.
You think that we waste our time here, brothers? Perhaps you consider Plexius unimportant, deserving to share the same fate as Alantaris IV.
Sorry.
Profound apologies, Brother Captain. However, it seems that our inquisitorial masters have miscalculated. This inspection draws us away from more obvious threats.
It is never a waste of time securing the realm of the Emperor against the threat of Xenos corruption. Follow me and observe. The chronometers of these chambers show decreasing durations of activation, brothers. See? As we move further aft, the time of suspension decreases by months at a time with each new row.
They were activated at different times. Whatever is stored within was not loaded in one place.
Even with an inclement warp and no navigator, the Volans Batavus could make the trip from Kabaya to Plexius in 100 days. The first of these chambers was activated nearly a year ago.
The master of this ship has lied to us. We must confront him with these facts and seek explanation. By the Emperor! He will tell us the truth or he will suffer at the hands of the Inquisition for impeding our duty.
You mete out punishment too swiftly, Levestus. While I don't doubt that Isari is hiding something, he is a rogue trader, and they are notoriously erratic.
Though it may be illicit to smuggle goods or perhaps even sell overly ripe fruit, it is not a concern for the Death Watch. Brother Captain, what is your assessment?
The ship was at Alantaris IV before the Gene Stealer infestation came to light, when the Xenos cult held full sway. I believe Isari and the crew have been corrupted.
So sure, Brother Captain? You seem remarkably calm for such an opinion.
You recall the armsman you spoke to? How did he react to your presence?
Not at all. Credit to the man. He stood his ground like a soldier.
Our presence intimidates even the most loyal servant of the Emperor without effort. You purposefully intimidated that armsman, and he did not even take a step back. That is not bravery, brother. It is psychic control. He did not react because he could not.
So what is in the temporal chambers if not fruit?
The Gene Stealers do not breed themselves, but implant their genetic structure into hosts. The hosts give birth to infected children, each successive generation showing fewer traits of the corruption. In 4 generations, a pure strain is born and the cycle begins again. The chambers have been activated and deactivated several times. If we were to inspect the ship's log, we would discover that Isiri had visited Alantaris on many occasions. Every time he passes by, he has loaded aboard a fresh generation of gene stealers.
Rossi's us! More than 300 of the beasts!
More than enough to infect a hive of Plexius within days of their arrival.
The containers are set to open aboard the space station. With a crew in the thousands, hundreds of square kilometers of holds and storage base to hide in, the orbital station is an ideal staging ground from which to begin the infiltration of the planet.
At the sound of Lavestus readying his bolter, Artemis noticed the crew above pause in their work. His battle brother's eagerness to fight was laudable in most situations, but it was in danger of becoming a liability in the present circumstances. Artemis laid a hand on his fellow Space Marine's gun and gently shook his head.
Our duty is clear, brothers. Harrick, your atomizer cannon can destroy a container with every shot. We need to begin the purge now.
I have power cells for perhaps 20, brother. What about the rest?
And I am sure that Isiri and his crew would not stand idly by to allow us.
That is why we must take a more circumspect approach. Lavestus, open battle is not always the answer.
You cannot be suggesting that we ignore this threat, Brother Captain. Everybody aboard is contaminated.
Brother Captain, the vessel has not arrested her velocity per your instructions.
Isiri will attempt to dock the ship before we can stop him.
And we will allow him to think that is possible. We will conclude our inspection, return to the gunship, and when we are clear, we shall transmit orders to the station commander to open fire once the Volans Batavus is in range. The ship and its detestable cargo will be obliterated.
The pronouncement silenced the debate. Urbino leaned close to Halleck and patted his battle brother's weapon.
Sometimes even an atomizer cannon is not a big enough gun.
Halleck shrugged.
I've never had any complaint before.
Artemis nodded towards the stairway and the kill squad followed him back, examining the temporal dampening containers as they passed. The brother captain was calm on the outside, but unseen by his companions, he was on edge. 300 gene stealers shared the ship with them, in addition to the hostile crew. If the aliens were set free, the kill squad could not deal with such a threat. Their primary duty was to ensure the destruction of this vessel. He was also very conscious that the number of robed figures on the gantries above had more than doubled since the Space Marines had entered. They had given up all pretense of work and followed the progress of the Death Watch as they reached the bottom of the steps.
Sekor, bring the gunship in for landing. We will be alighting soon.
I do not think the ship's master wishes us to leave, Brother Captain.
Compelled by the psychic command of their alien masters, the crew opened fire as one. Artemis and the others broke apart out of instinct, seeking cover. Lads fire and the rounds of autoguns and shotguns sprayed around the kill squad as they returned fire. Artemis picked his shots, sending single bolts from his pistol up into the swathed figures amongst the shadows of the lifting machinery. Beside him, Lavestus' heavy bolter churned out dozens of rounds, explosive projectiles rippling detonations along the gantries and walkways. By the light of the las beams and muzzle flare, Artemis could better make out the features of his foes. Some were normal men, but most were hybrids, showing signs of Xenos infection. Their eyes were bulbous, skin purplish. Many concealed extra arms beneath their robes and dome-shaped craniums under cowls and hoods. As he fired the last round from his pistol, Artemis drew another magazine from his belt.
Urbino, unarmored targets, metal storm rounds.
A wise choice, Brother Captain. I wish I'd thought of such a thing.
Ignoring his companion's jibe, Artemis slammed home the fresh magazine and opened fire on a group of enemy dashing across a gantry directly above the stairs. The metal storm ammunition did not detonate inside the targets like standard issue bolt rounds, but instead
exploded a few meters from the target, showering them with white-hot shards of shrapnel. Artemis's burst of fire shredded the robes and flesh of four crew in two shots. The ragged remains of the hybrids plummeted onto the steps behind him.
Let free the retribution of the Emperor! Suffer not the alien to live! Purge the unclean! We shall avenge the dead of Alantaris!
I left, Urbino! Heavy weapon! Lavestis! Three targets behind the crane rig to your right! Alec! What are you doing?
Powering up! Really don't want to rush this. We don't need a containment failsafe to break, do we?
I do not think you are a fool, Captain Artemis, so return the respect. The moment you hailed my vessel, I realized my precious cargo was under threat. Do you think I would blithely pass into the guns of the station? Your arrival has caused us some vexation, I must be honest. No matter. The Brotherhood of the Eternal Void will not be so easily thwarted. We have laid claim to Plexius, and we will rule here as we ruled on Alantaris. You speak of revenge? What are 4 billion deaths, Brother Captain? My kin, my comrades, and the world that worshipped them cry out for justice!
Artemis's heart went cold as he realized that Isiri was no psychic pawn, but a willing servant of the abhorrent Gene Stealers. He could not know, did not want to know, what kind of unholy bargain a man would make with such allies, to turn on his own kind and doom worlds to extinction. Such considerations were for later. A more immediate concern was the appearance of a las cannon, wielded by a three-armed hybrid, clambering into the cab of a lifter above the middle of the hold. Artemis fired, but the fragments of the metal storm round clattered uselessly against the hull of the crane.
Alec! Taste the breath of Nidhogg, you Xenos filth!
The atomizer cannon rapidly turned a lifting rig to molten metal, obliterating a dozen crew who were using it as cover. The center of the crane structure tumbled into the middle of the hold, pitching more Gene Stealer infected and hybrids to their deaths.
Urbino! Flank left! More enemies coming through the venting above! Lavestis! Suppression fire!
Powered blade in hand, Artemis swung himself to the top of the closest temporal dampening cabinet. He broke into a sprint, leaping from one to the next without breaking stride, heading for a low-hanging walkway just a few meters above the hold floor. Bullets zipped past and las beams flickered from his armor as he jumped, hooking his arm over the rail. With one swing, Artemis was clear and heading into the midst of the enemy. A lucky shotgun blast pelted his armor with metal, but it did not slow his charge. A metal storm bolt tore the face off the shotgunner. Artemis plunged past the falling body, driving his power sword into the chest of the next foe. The half-human creature struck out with claw-tipped hands, its long tongue lashing between narrow fangs.
Bite my blade, alien scum!
Artemis ripped his power sword free and slashed across the creature's face, parting it from right to left with one sweep. Alien blood fountained from the wound, splashing across the Brother Captain's armor. Ahead of him, a handful of hybrids raised their las guns. Three rounds from the Captain's pistol turned them to ragged corpses.
Your concern was misplaced, Brother Captain. These foes are no match for the Emperor's finest. Less than a dozen remain. We will soon be blessed with victory!
Artemis vaulted back to the floor of the hold and looked around, seeing that Lavestis had spoken true. His attention was drawn to a mist rising from the stored temporal containers.
Thoughts of victory are premature, Brother Captain. The chronometers of the damping chambers have been zeroed.
The temporal cabinets at the far end of the hold wheezed open, spilling a cloud of condensing vapor into the air. Ruddy lights glowed into fire, dim at first but strengthening.
How long do we have before these dormant beasts can fight?
No time at all. I served with an excavator team on Throthos. They uncovered a lictor in permafrost. It attacked them within half a minute of being cut free.
These are not even full stasis chambers. Attack imminent, brothers. More and more of the dampening cabinets were opening, moving like a slow wave towards the kill squad. In the red gleam of heat lamps, gene stealers started to move. The shadows of unfurling alien limbs cast against the machinery above the containers. Haddock turned his weapon upon one of the creatures.
One down.
Urbino, cover fire against the crew. Everybody else, conserve your fire for the pure strains.
In the depths of the hold, the first gene stealer dragged itself out of the top of its container. It was a hunched creature, its chitinous dorsal flanges glinting with moisture. Forearms unfolded, two ending in human-like hands clinging to the rim of the cabinet, the other two each tipped with dagger-long claws. It turned its bulbous head towards Artemis, black eyes gleaming in the light of the heat lamps. Salvo from Levestus's heavy bolter caught the alien full on, ripping apart its skull and chest in a flurry of detonations, spraying gore. Its shattered corpse slumped back into the temporal container.
We do the Emperor's work, brothers. Even now he watches us, and by the manner of our deaths will we be judged. Let us be washed into his holy embrace with the blood of the Xenos.
Death stalks us today. But we shall not go alone to his dark abode. My ancestors wait for me in the Hall of Victors, and I shall not be ashamed to sit amongst them.
More of the pure strain gene stealers were emerging from their chambers. Some met by the fire of Artemis and Urbino, some avoiding the wrath of the Space Marines entirely, slipping into the shadow and mist.
Why do they not attack? I thought these beasts fearless.
They are not mindless killers, brother. To come at us in small numbers is to be slain with ease. Gene Stealer prefers to attack in a massed way. I gather their strength, knowing that some will die, but others will survive to reach us.
One would not expect such self-sacrifice from these alien horrors.
Do not mistake murderous instinct for honorable intent. They live and die for the brood. Does the first fire wasp that dies defending the nest fight with honor? Or is it simply driven to lay down its life, unknowing of the sacrifice it makes, expended unthinkingly for the survival of the many?
Do not seek to find purpose in the Xenos. There is no dignity in these abhorrent fiends. They are a blight to be expunged. Praise the Emperor that he has delivered us to this place so that we may slaughter them in his name.
If it's all the same to you, my doom-cast warriors, I would rather fight a little longer.
Haddock turned away and ascended the steps behind the kill squad. Reaching the second flight, he turned his atomizer cannon towards the sealed door, blocking their exit. The high-powered blast of Haddock's cannon turned the portal to a steaming pile of slag, droplets of molten metal splashing onto his armor. The remains of the door glowed white-hot at the edges, a near-perfect circle seared through it. Light from the main corridor spilled through the swirling cloud of vapor. Moments later, a hail of lasbolts greeted Haddock as he mounted the steps. He fired again through the opening.
Brother warriors, your weapons are better suited to the task ahead. I count more than 20 of the scum using the doorways for cover.
I shall lead the way, brothers. Lend me your fire. Urbino bounded up the steps and past Haddock, unleashing the fury of his bolter as he ducked through the hole in the door.
The Vessers, go next. Cover me from the stairs.
The white consul heaved up his heavy bolter without question and turned towards the steps. A hail of bullets rattled against his backpack, showering flakes of paint and slivers of ceramite as he climbed the open staircase. Reaching Haddock, he turned back to the hold, ignoring the rounds sparking from the metal rail and walkway.
Now, brother, I have your back.
With the flicker of bolts streaming over him from Levestus's weapon, Artemis snapped off a few more shots as he backed towards the steps. Looking into the main corridor, he saw Urbino a few meters ahead. The Space Marine stood against one wall, firing steady bursts from his bolter at targets towards the bow of the ship.
We need to find a place to hold. One way in and out only.
The crew quarters? One of the gun turrets?
Why break free of the hold only to volunteer ourselves into fresh confinement? We need to keep moving. Secure lines of retreat.
Artemis looked past Lavestis across the hold. More than 50 of the containment chambers had opened already, and the others were coming to life as he watched. He could see two open access hatches leading up from the secondary hold, dozens of shapes emerging from the shadows below. The Gene Stealers were massing. Perhaps 30 or 40 had evaded the fire of the Space Marines.
A temporary delay to the inevitable, Herrick, nothing more. We will be heavily outnumbered in minutes. Our only chance is to contain the angles of the enemy attack.
All well and good, brother Captain. But where?
The main bridge. Ideal for defense. And I would hold Vanar Kemptisri to account for his treachery. I will see him slain before I fall to his Xenos masters.
A worthy plan, brother. Heresy begets retribution.
With Lavestis covering the rear with his heavy bolter, the kill squad withdrew from the hold. The main corridor was wide enough for Artemis and Urbino to fight side by side, bolter and bolt pistol cutting a path through the hybrids and psychically controlled crewmen blocking their path. It was a slow process, clearing out storage lockers and side chambers of lurking foes, and all the while Artemis was aware of the opening temporal chambers and the massing pure strains behind. After several minutes, they reached a long stairwell about 300 meters from the hold entrance, leading to the upper superstructure. Isseri's followers, numbering several dozen, held the upper level, and a stream of gunfire greeted Artemis as he set foot on the lower flight. He moved back, armor pitted and cracked.
Urbino, ready frag!
The brother captain and his companion brought forth fragmentation charges, looking at each other as they readied the disc-shaped grenades.
On my mark! 3, 2, 1!
The two Space Marines rounded into the stairwell together. The grenades looked like a shower of pebbles as Artemis and Urbino tossed them up the long stair. The charges bounced and clattered from the walls to land against the men and half-men huddled at the top. Artemis spied several of the visor-helmed armsmen, the rest dressed in the robes and coveralls he had seen worn by their foes in the hold. For a second, he locked gaze with one of the crew and stared into unthinking eyes. Under the psychic domination of the Gene Stealer brood, the man was no longer capable of free thought. But Artemis spared him no pity. Though he had not chosen to become a pawn of the Xenos infestation, betrayed by his ship's master, his weakness condemned him. A Space Marine would never have been subjugated by an alien will. Grenades exploded, filling the landing with scything shrapnel. Twisted hybrids screamed as flesh was lacerated and punctured, but the mind-controlled crewmen were slain without a sound, eerily silent as their ragged bodies flopped to the deck and tumbled down the stairs.
With me, brother! Give the foe the edges of our blades!
Suffer not the alien to live!
Artemis stormed up the stair with Urbino close on his heel. The brother captain swept his sword from its scabbard as a fresh salvo of fire met him. Ignoring the impacts as he plowed through the fuselage, he leapt up the last few steps, firing his bolt pistol. Two claw-handed hybrids fell back, their bodies torn apart by the bolts. Leaping over them, Artemis smashed his pistol into the brutish purple face of a third, turning its bestial features into a mess of blood and broken bone. Behind him, Urbino drew one of a pair of short gladii hanging at his waist, his bolter in his other hand. The edge of the weapon's blade glinted with a sliver of diamond. The sword could slice through steel with ease and made short work of the unarmored crewmen that hurled themselves at the Space Marine with fists and gun butts. The two warriors had fought side by side enough times to complement each other's fighting style. Artemis used his brute strength and armor like a battering ram, wading into the press of foes, heedless of danger. Every part of him was his weapon. His pistol crushing skulls, his elbows and fists snapping bone. Foes, barreled over by his sheer mass, were swiftly dispatched by slashes from his blade. Following in his wake, Urbino fought with more finesse.
dispatching those that evaded the Brother Captain's assault with efficient stabs and cuts, severing limbs and arteries, punching into vital organs through alien mutated rib cages, and tearing into bloated skulls without pause. Blood, both human and alien, drenched the two space marines as they tore through the waiting enemy, desecrating the honored black of their armor with filth.
Brother Captain, I have movement from the hold.
Report! What do you see, brother?
Pure strains. More than 100. There are others waiting in the darkness. This is just the first wave. Switching to Hellfire rounds!
Levestus laid down a carpet of fire into the swarm of alien monsters surging up the steps towards him. The Hellfire rounds were tipped with crystal, impregnated with an acidic viral compound tailored to the alien physiology of the Gene Stealers. Where the rounds detonated, inside the creatures and on the hardened carapaces of chitin, they showered the mutagenic virus, the acid hissing and spitting as it burned through flesh. Within moments, the pathogen was surging through the bloodstreams of the Gene Stealers that survived the initial hits. They fell down, twitching madly, clawed hands spasming, long tongues lashing wildly.
Too many! I can't hold the stair! Pulling back to cover the doorway!
Negative, brother! Eric, fire support! Levestus, fall back to our position! We must press on to the bridge!
Levestus turned and ran as Harrick moved back down the corridor to his position. The white consul did not look back as he passed the space wolf. A few dozen meters behind him, a crowd of pure strain Gene Stealers hurtled along the corridor. Harrick readied himself, legs braced, and opened fire. The shot vaporized the leading creatures. 10 or more of them turned them into a cloud of droplets and particles that spattered the walls with a fine mist of yellow filth. The decking was shorn through, and one wall turned to metal slurry. Pacing backwards, Harrick waited until the creatures were less than 50 meters away. Sprinting fast, he fired again. Another dozen Gene Stealers disappeared, their constituent atoms scattered by the radiation blast.
Ha! They don't look so keen now. They're falling back towards the hold.
There are other ways out, used by the crew. It will not be long before they come again, and we do not know from where.
Brother Captain, the Volans Batavus has altered course. The ship is entering low orbit of Plexius.
Our foes have fled for the moment, it seems.
For the moment. Some new ploy by Isseri, I assume. Direct confrontation has failed the foe, so they seek recourse to a different strategy.
Good. I was beginning to worry that we might have won.
Warning. Atmospheric entry in 20 minutes. All crew prepare for emergency atmospheric entry. Attend to stations.
Damn Isseri and his foul-spawn crew. He is going to crash-land the ship on Plexius.
Then we have succeeded. Even if the ship survives re-entry, it is not built for planetfall. Everything aboard will perish.
Including us, if we remain.
We cannot be certain of that. What if the ship hits a hive? Millions could be killed.
We cannot risk a single Gene Stealer escaping into a Plexian hive.
We cannot kill every creature aboard, not with the weapons we have to hand. It pains me, but our best course of action is to evacuate and warn the Imperial Commander. We will continue the hunt on the surface.
What about the planetary grid? There must be defense lasers or cannons capable of blowing this ship out of the sky.
Your desire to live clouds your judgment, brothers. Understandable, but my chapter teaches us to be free of such considerations.
You call me a coward?
I do not doubt your bravery, brother, just your instinct. You would sacrifice yourself to save us all, yet in your subconscious you already consider the mission failed, and you may not be wrong. It is reasonable for us to extract and seek to limit the damage of our failure.
I would rather die than suffer defeat.
I would rather live to bring a later victory. We should take the flight bay and evacuate. Sekor, bring the gunship aboard again.
Ignore that, Sekor. The mission is not yet over. If we take the bridge, we can ensure the ship burns up during atmospheric entry. We will perish, but so will our foes.
Brother Captain, We are too close to atmospheric entry to land. I can attempt to do so once we have passed re-entry threshold. What are your orders?
Hold station. Prepare to dock as soon as it is possible.
Confirmed.
So, we take the flight bay?
No. We will attempt Brother Lavestis's solution first. If we are thwarted, then we will evacuate.
The brother captain turned away from the rest of the kill squad and set off, striding towards the bridge with bolt pistol and sword in hand. Artemis did not look back. Lavestis walked after him. Urbino and Harrick looked at each other and then to their two departing battle brothers.
Warning. Atmospheric entry in 17 minutes. All crew prepare for emergency atmospheric entry. Attend to stations.
By Russ's mighty spear, these fanatics will be the death of me.
If we survive this, I'm going to request an easier duty. Taking on an Eldar avatar, single-handed perhaps?
The two space marines followed after their leader, breaking into a run to catch up with their companions. Isseri was no fool, and perhaps guessing the intent of the kill squad, had mustered his main defense around the bridge of the Volans Batavus. The bridge was accessed via two corridors, each 100 meters long, leading to a shallow flight of steps and the main doors. It had taken some time to battle up to the highest deck, and now the strike team paused to formulate their plan of attack, Lavestis again guarding the rear with his heavy bolter. The deck was littered with the corpses of dead foes, but there seemed no end to their number. The corridors were flanked by crew cabins seemingly filled with enemies. Most were hybrids with autoguns and las rifles, and a few armsmen with shotguns. Of more concern to Artemis were the glimpses of heavier weapons. The muzzle of a plasma gun poking from a doorway. The distinctive barrel of a melter gun seen beneath the robe of a foe.
How could a ship this size carry so many crew? We must have killed a regular complement twice over already.
Spare hold space converted to living quarters.
Their numbers alone are no match, but they have armaments capable of penetrating power armor.
Isseri's contacts on Letter of Mark give him access to all manner of weapons. He has been wise enough to save them for the last defense.
He values them less than the lives of the pure strains, or at least the brood does. I have not seen a full gene stealer since we ascended.
Only the pure strains can breed. Isseri hopes to deposit them on Plexius. Why risk the lives of his most precious cargo when he still has plenty of minions to throw against us?
Warning. Atmospheric entry in 8 minutes. All crew prepare for emergency atmospheric entry. Attend to stations.
We are running out of time, but I don't think a frontal assault would serve us well.
As if to illustrate the Space Wolf's point, a ball of plasma screamed down the right-hand corridor, slamming into the bulkhead.
We would not advance more than 20 meters into the teeth of that. With the foe concentrated around the bridge, perhaps now is the opportune moment to seize the flight bay. We could hold for 10 minutes and then extract by gunship.
We do not accept mission failure until there is no other option. Halleck. If we cannot gain ground along the corridors, we must make our own ingress.
Through the walls? Possible, but I only have power for 10 more shots. It will leave little to protect the bridge once we seize it.
Must every command be met with doubts and questions? You have a bolt pistol, brother, and your axe. In the hands of a space marine, they suffice for the surest defense.
Just making sure you understand the situation, Captain.
As the rest of the kill squad retreated a short way down the steps, Halleck hefted his atomizer cannon and aimed it at the bulkhead to his left.
One doorway, as requested.
Beyond the gaping hole left by the melter blaster, Artemis could see a mess hall leading towards the bridge. He broke into a run, dashing across the corridor as las bolts and heavy weapon fire flashed down from the bridge steps. He ducked through the opening, pistol already blazing at the hybrids and crewmen within. Shells cut swathes through the enemy using the long tables and benches as cover, spraying splinters from the metal furniture as deadly as the shrapnel from the exploding rounds. A few seconds later, Urbino entered behind him,
a flurry of bullets ricocheting from his pauldron and backpack as he dashed through the gap. While Artemis continued to clear the room, the Black Shield turned and leaned back out of the breach, firing his bolter at the enemy to cover Haddock as he thundered across the corridor, his cannon protectively couched in his arms like a child.
Lavestris, quickly!
The Emperor is my shield and protector. My faith in him is the armor of righteousness.
The chain feed of his heavy bolter swaying, Lavestris squared up to the enemy along the left corridor and laid down a storm of fire, moving his aim left and right. Dozens of bolt rounds chewed through the men and half-humans caught in the fusillade. Bodies slumped into view, while those that survived hastily ducked from sight. With something like a contemptuous strut, the White Consul joined his companions in the mess hall, which was now clear of enemies.
You give our foes too much credit sometimes, brothers.
Artemis pointed at the wall in the direction of the bridge and nodded to Haddock. The Space Wolf turned his atomizer cannon on the bulkhead and created a new opening, revealing a mass of snarling, inhuman faces in the wood-paneled stateroom beyond. Artemis and Urbino charged again, launching themselves into the hybrids without hesitation. Claws left scratch marks through the paint of their livery and welts in their selenite-plated armor as their blades hewed down the brutish throng.
Warning. Atmospheric entry in 6 minutes. All crew prepare for emergency atmospheric entry. Attend to stations.
Room by room, the kill squad hacked and blasted their way towards the bridge, until Artemis's existence was nothing but a blur of bolter fire, fanged mouths, sword strokes and slashing claws, punctuated by the ship's interminable countdown to atmospheric entry. Nearing his goal, the brother captain was surprised to find that there were no more foes to slay. Their wake was a scene of carnage. Dozens of bodies heaped upon the deck and draped over the ornate furnishings of the staterooms. He could not quite believe the enemy were all dead and sent Urbino to scout the entrance to the bridge.
Corridors and entryway clear. I think that is the last of the crew.
Haddock, get us onto the bridge.
Even as he spoke the words, Artemis felt a change in the ship. Amongst the background vibrations of the plasma engines, he sensed a greater shaking. Soon it was clear that the whole starship was trembling.
Warning. Atmospheric entry. Attend to stations. Emergency protocols are in effect.
The armored bridge doors were no more a barrier to Haddock's cannon than any other obstacle. As the fumes of the explosion dissipated, Artemis stepped into the control chamber of the Volans Batavus. The bridge was semicircular, the walls lined with consoles of which sat a multitude of half-machine servitors. Connected to their station by coils of cable and wires, pierced by nutritional feed tubes, the semi-human automatons attended to their tasks, oblivious to all other sensation. An ocular screen 10 meters wide dominated the center of the bridge, for the moment filled with the bright flare of atmospheric entry. Artemis took this in at a glance and focused on two figures below the screen. Isseri stood calmly facing the doorway, his hands behind his back, a satisfied smile on his face. Beside him loomed a much larger creature. It was a pure strain gene stealer, bigger than any the Space Marine had seen before, though not so large as the horrific broodlords he had faced in the Tyranid High Fleets. The Patriarch of the Brood, genitor of the mass of aliens stowed in the hold. The brother captain was only dimly aware of his companions joining him as he looked into the swirling golden orbs of the Gene Stealer's eyes. Artemis could not remember why he had come here. He was certain he was meant to do something, but it no longer seemed important. He knew that the thoughts pressing into his mind of brotherhood and family were not his own, and he resisted, picturing scenes from his past. He focused on the ossuaries of the Mortifactor's temple fort above Possel, where he had spent many hours learning the names of the great heroes of the chapter. He could feel the weight of their expectation upon him now, and he latched onto the thought, using it to drive back the inhuman presence infiltrating his mind. Artemis broke free of the psychic attack just a moment before the Gene Stealer exploded, showering gobbets of charred flesh over Isiri and the bridge consoles. Halleck let the atomizer cannon fall from his grasp and drew his bolt pistol. He looked at Artemis, who was still recovering from the psychic assault of the Gene Stealer Patriarch.
No more energy cells. Captain, what are you waiting for? Kill the bastard!
Isiri's smug expression became one of horror as Artemis raised his pistol. But it passed in a moment as he adopted a calmer demeanor. The ship's commander glanced over his shoulder at the screen, and Artemis looked up to see thick yellow clouds streaming past the plummeting starship.
I die without regret.
You are too late, Captain. You cannot stop the Brotherhood of the Void.
Warning. Ground impact imminent. Unable to correct. Ship loss protocols are in effect.
I have no regrets either. Least of all this.
The bolt round turned Isiri's head to a cloud of blood and grey matter. The body crumpled to the deck, sinking into the remains of Isiri's inhuman master.
Warning. Ground impact imminent. Unable to correct. Ship loss protocol.
The crew address servitor slumped across its console, a gaping wound in the side of its head. Harrick lowered his bolt pistol.
That was getting really annoying.
The Vestus did not waste any time. He moved to the navigation controls and analyzed the flow of data across the row of small screens.
We are too late. Too far into the gravity well to pull out of the drop. We have failed.
We have company, brothers.
A tide of purple and blue was boiling up the corridors towards the bridge, broken by glinting eyes, bared fangs, and flexing claws. Artemis looked again at the display screen, his attention caught by the glimmer of lights through the thinning smog of the hive world. Below the ship, a tower sparkled with a million lamps, a hive that was home to billions of humans. Like a termite's nest, it heaped up upon itself, its lower reaches stretching for kilometers in every direction. Huge turbine housings and power generators sprawled into a sluggish ocean like the roots of an immense fossilized tree. Artemis saw a chance and strode to the navigation console.
Hold them as long as you can.
No chance of reaching the launch bay now.
No matter. The shuddering of the Volans Batavis increased for a few seconds as Artemis fired the attitude thrusters. On the screen, the view swung away from the hive until it was filled with the undulating blackness of the oil-slicked sea.
A Gene Stealer can withstand a lot, but not the pressure of 1,000 meters of water.
The path wrought by the kill squad to reach the bridge now provided a perfect route of attack for the Pure Strains. Levestus' heavy bolter took a harsh toll of the aliens as they burst onto the steps to the bridge, choking the doorway with their dead. Beside him, Artemis, Haddock, and Urbino met any survivor of the barrage with bolter, bolt pistol, and blade.
They seem eager to throw themselves onto our guns. I thought you said they were not mindless, Captain.
Desperation. They sense they are doomed. Perhaps they think to retake the bridge. If there are hybrids and mind slaves still alive, they might yet hope to correct the descent.
Perhaps. If not, what other reason?
Spite. Pure, vengeful spite against those that have thwarted them. Inquisitor Agmar once said that the Tyranid should be hated because they were incapable of such emotion in return. I have looked into the eyes of these predators and disagree. I have seen venomous, alien abhorrence in their gaze, beyond the lust to kill.
That seems unlikely.
These creatures feed upon us, and in doing so, they become more alike to us. They devour to become strong, to feast upon our genetic power. But from humans, I believe they have also evolved to hate. It might be the greatest boon they take from us.
There was a brief lull as the enemy gathered their strength again, retreating to the safety of the surrounding rooms, momentarily balked by the firepower ranged against them. Artemis was glad that the Gene Stealers had not yet worked out the tally of their dead and reached the conclusion, as he had done so moments before, that the kill squad was almost out of ammunition. He risked a glance behind, reassured by the sight of the dark sea ahead of the plunging ship. It was not quite the death in battle he would wish for, but as he had promised his predecessors, he would not go to his grave alone. The respite was short-lived. Another wave of Gene Stealers erupted towards the bridge, more of their kind streaming along the corridor to the left.
As I might not get another chance, answer me something, Urbino.
I will do what I can to oblige.
Is it the Rainbow Warriors? I mean, I can understand why you would keep that a secret.
How so? The Rainbow Warriors are descended from the Gene Seed of Gilliman himself, as are the White Consuls. It is a heritage born with pride.
Yes, but the name...
No, brother. I'm not of the Rainbow Warriors.
Must we name every chapter there has ever been to get our answer?
Even if you guessed correctly, I would not confirm it.
Surely you'll not curse me to die in ignorance.
Artemis looked back into the bridge chamber to see a gaping hole blown through the starboard bulkhead. Consuls lay in ruins, servitors sprawled across their panels as bloody ragdolls. Through the breach he could see a black hull marked by pale heat striations.
It did not sound as if you could reach the launch bay. I thought you might like to leave this ship of the damned.
Have you ever been kissed by another space marine, Sekor?
Not unless you shave off that awful beard, Harrig. And not on the lips.
A hatchway opened in the side of the gunship's fuselage, yellow light streaming from within. The gap was just a few meters, an easy leap for space marines. Artemis reloaded his bolt pistol. He judged there to be nearly 100 dead Gene Stealers piled in the approachway. But the corpses were little hindrance to the agile aliens as they scrambled ceaselessly over their own dead.
We cannot break off. The moment we turn, the enemy will drag us down.
Harry, turbulence is increasing the lower we get. I cannot stay here.
Go, brothers. This is the moment I have long dreamt of. With my blades, I will secure your escape.
You're a bloody Doom Eagle. I knew it. Glorious death, honor the dead and everything. Am I right?
Urbino did not reply. He dropped his bolt pistol and drew his second gladius, taking up a fighting stance at the top of the steps.
I am no such thing, brother. I am proud of what I am. I am a scion of Baal, son of Sanguinius, noble brother of the Blood Angels.
Urbino advanced down the steps, meeting the oncoming Gene Stealer's blade to claw. He moved with effortless grace, his twin blades a shining blur as he parried, cut, and thrust his way into the midst of the vicious aliens.
I hear the call of my lord Sanguinius. His torment, his pain floods through me and I can resist it no longer. Oh, beautiful angel of death, lend me your strength, your skill, and your dignity. I am your son and fall to your claim.
A claw slashed into Urbino's helm, sending it flying through the air. It was the first time in 3 years Artemis had laid eyes on his battle brother without his armor, for Urbino had always been cloistered alone and not on a mission, as befitted a black shield. His face was pale, framed by a shock of long blonde hair. Thin lips were drawn back, revealing teeth every bit as sharp as those of the alien attackers. Yet it was the eyes of the space marine that were the strangest. They were blackened orbs, the pupils dilated to fill their sockets, becoming pits of darkness. Urbino hurled himself at his foes, unheeding as fang and claw drew ragged wounds across his face and tore into his armor. A gouge across his neck sprayed blood, but he did not slow. Every blow from his swords chopping and stabbing into flesh, parting limbs and heads from alien bodies.
I am Sanguinius, Lord of Bao, Sire of the Blood Angels. Your treason will be avenged, your heresy punished. My death will not save you, vile one.
Artemis knew not what the Blood Angel was seeing, but it was clearly not the horde of gene stealers swarming around him. There would be time later to consider and to mourn. To tarry would render the Space Marine sacrifice meaningless.
To the gunship, swiftly! Farewell, Urbino.
It has been an honor to fight alongside you. You are a true brother.
I fear he hears you not, brother.
It matters not. Such words need to be said.
The three warriors of the Death Watch sprinted across the bridge and leapt onto the wrecked remains of the consoles beneath the breach opened by Sekor.
You first, Levestus!
The White Consul did not argue. He hurled himself across the gap to the gunship, crashing headfirst through the open hatch.
I will follow! Go!
The brother captain jumped back to the deck and ran to the bridge entrance. He saw that miraculously Urbino fought on. His armor almost shorn away, exposed flesh streaming with blood from dozens of wounds. Tearing his gaze away, Artemis slashed his blade across the neck of a fallen gene stealer, severing its head. He stooped and picked it up, holding it aloft towards Urbino for a moment in tribute. Just before Artemis turned away, the Blood Angel finally fell, toppling amongst the pile of gene stealers he had slain. Artemis turned and ran for the escape route. He jumped back onto the broken consoles and took a single stride before hurling himself out into the sky. He saw the water pass beneath him, barely a kilometer down, and then landed inside the gunship. Artemis stood at the open hatch and watched as the Volans Batavus plunged into the sea below. The impact broke the spine of the vessel, the hull crumpling like foil. Explosions tore along the ship's length, and lightning forked from nose to tail as the sea met the ship's reactor system. The wreck lay on the surface, foam geysering high as water surged into the ship through twisted panels and ruptured bays. It did not take long to sink. Plumes of escaping air and vapor spewing from the ship's remains until it disappeared from view, churning the surface of the oil-slicked water. Artemis held out the gene stealer's head. He would flense the flesh from the bone and chitin, and gild the skull for display in the Chapter Fortress Monastery when he eventually returned to the Mortifactors. It was a prize, taken from a slain foe, as his forefathers had taken trophies for 1,000 generations before. More than that, it was a reminder. For Urbino, for Alontaris, for the Emperor.